Hello and welcome to Book Lovers Companion. My name is Edith, and right next to me is my lovely co-host, the Chattering Teacup.
Hello.
And here with us for this episode, episode 50, dear listeners, yes, indeed, our youngest author so far, and we are very proud to have you on our show, Shanti Hershenson. Hello and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for being here. So, shall we dive right in, Teacup? Because we are very impressed by your work. Like we said, you are the youngest so far. Correct me if I'm wrong, you are 14?
Yes.
No? And there's quite a number of books under your belt. Yeah. Impressive, impressive, like I said. So, what do we have, Teacup? We have the Biome Lock Saga. Yeah. Which started out, I think you wrote on your webpage as a standalone. Then you thought of writing two books, and now you're heading towards a trilogy.
Yes, so Biome Lock started out as one book that I started writing right in the middle of the pandemic when I was isolated and I was really upset. So I started writing it, and I originally thought it was going to be this 20,000-word novella that maybe if it was good enough, I'd publish or try to look into traditional publishing. Except what ended up happening is I had so much time on my hands, it grew very long and very wordy, and this very extensive 800-page novel. Ooh. And it was insane, but 800 pages is also a little long to publish a book without having a lot of problems and having a lot of people be unable to finish it. So what I ended up doing is I ended up splitting it into three books. The first Biome Lock book was published in August of 2021, and the other two are being edited right now. And I actually ended up writing a fourth one later on. Ooh. And that book needs a lot more work, I feel like, than the other ones, but it's also a little cleaner, and it's not 800 pages long.
Let me ask you this. Who decided to cut it off or cut it into three parts? Was it your decision, or did someone suggest it to you and said, for your target audience, maybe that's too long?
I had a few people suggesting it, but ultimately, I think it was my decision when I was editing it and I was looking, I was just thinking, this is never going to be published. I was like freaking out because I was already marketing it as my debut novel, but I had written some other books and I wanted to keep writing, but I didn't want to mess up the whole schedule and everything that I had built. So I ended up deciding, okay, it can be a duology. The first book was about 120,000 words long and the second one was about 90,000. Again, 120,000 words is very long for a book. And it was also extensive, and it was very difficult to keep as that long. So again, the book was cut in two, and that's how we have a trilogy. I do think Biome Lock has a story. A lot of my series are like this, where they could actually just work as full novels, and maybe they'd be better that way. But I do kind of like serialized stories because I like insane cliffhangers and all these crazy stuff. A lot of people don't. I 100% do.
And tell us a little about the idea for this Biome Lock saga. Where did it come from? What about your characters? Did they just pop out of nowhere? Or were you carrying them with you for a longer time?
So Biome Lock started, I feel like, as a conversation on the beach between my sister and I. We live right by the beach, so we go to the beach a lot. And we were talking about writing a book. I had written these two novellas prior. I do not like them. They're really bad. And I was like, I want to write another book. What book do I write? And I want to write a novel this time. And I was actually talking about writing it with my sister. I just never ended up doing that because siblings working on books together does not equal a very successful book. But I ended up deciding alien invasion and these biomes that the characters are all sentenced to. And in terms of the characters, I had the main character's name is Griffin. And I was I want to name the main character Griffin. I don't know why. And I had his basic appearance. Other than that, I kind of just started writing and just let the whole story kind of develop him. And I think he's a pretty developed character. He has a lot of, he's got a whole extensive backstory. He's got all this stuff to him. He's actually probably my favorite Biome Lock character. There's one more character in the books that I think I might like better than him.
Okay. And the aliens, the Sorb, where did they come from?
They came from kind of, I think, nightmares I had as a child. I used to be very scared of aliens as a kid. I would have nightmares about aliens. I would just be very scared of them for some reason. And I'd like kind of turn that little irrational fear of mine into writing a book. Though I do, I should note that the Zorb also kind of, they come from like pieces of writing. I went from really being scared of aliens to writing about them in the span of like a year. And I used to write about aliens in like third and fourth grade. And I took a lot of the elements I had written about then. I had the Zorb in a different story. And I was like, you know, I'm going to put the Zorb in this one. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how that came to be. Though I should note the Zorb aren't the most alien-like creatures. They're mm-hmm. essentially humans, except they have sharp teeth, and if you look at them in the eye, you're going to get sick. So mm-hmm. they're very similar.
I finished the first in just the one that's available on Amazon in the Biomlog saga before we started our recording, and you left us hanging.
Yes.
I have to accuse you of that, so I have to tell you.
She likes cliffhangers.
Yeah, obviously, so. Yeah. And what I didn't find out, let's put it that way, what I didn't find out during the first book was, where are the biomes? I mean, you don't have to tell us because we don't want to give anything away. But I got the idea, of course, again, correct me if I'm wrong, that they are no longer on planet Earth. Maybe I'm completely wrong and you don't want to tell us that. But I got the feeling they had been transported to somewhere else.
At least there's a possibility.
Yeah.
So the humans are still on. They're still on Earth, but they're on this very differently shaped Earth. Essentially, the Zorb have completely overrun everything that we know about our world. Honestly, you'll find very few parallels to how things used to be and how things are in the prologue compared to now. So I think it is safe to say it pretty much takes place on a whole new planet. Everything about the planet the Zorb have made is completely different. A lot of it's really run down. A lot of it they destroyed. So yeah, that's completely like a safe assumption. Yeah, they're kind of on a different world. They're just on this very like alienized Earth.
The book starts in the near future, 2030, and then it continues 30 years later. And it's also the way you write it and how it is put, it's very, or it starts out, maybe it changes in the later books, but it is dystopian in nature, isn't it? So I have to ask you, why dystopian? Maybe it changes to something else along the way, but the whole conquering of planet Earth and how people are treated and such.
And also the other books seem dystopian.
Why dystopian? Why this dystopian landscape? What is the appeal for you of this kind of genre?
I like dystopian. I feel like it has a lot of real world elements, but at the same time, it's all very like fiction. It's like, I think my favorite thing about dystopian is you don't have to create an entirely new world. You don't have to do all this extensive world building because the world's already there. You just can change it in however you want. Usually it's going to be in this really like dark kind of bad way. Mm-hmm. And also it offers the idea that, you know, in the future, the world can be better. I will say the next two books lean a little closer to science fiction. I feel there's a lot more spaceships and such. Mm-hmm. The fourth book is definitely not dystopian anymore, though it's still going to probably be marketed that way because the other ones are. The fourth book is more this science fiction kind of aftermath of what happened, because the third book was where it was supposed to end. The fourth book is the aftermath of it, where maybe things aren't over yet.
Oh dear, looking forward to that again. Would you say that you have inspired by certain authors or certain TV shows in writing this book?
Definitely. I think Biomlock was inspired a lot by Star Wars. Mm. I love Star Wars. I love all the aliens and planets and like the spaceships. And I actually, when I first started writing Biomlock, I would write it while rewatching all the Star Wars movies. And I would have these like marathons where I'd just be typing away on my computer. And that kind of added like these like little things or like little references to Star Wars. Actually, in the prologue, there's a pretty big Star Wars reference. And then there was originally another one in there that I actually took out because it didn't really fit the story. Mm-hmm. But you'll be able to find little hints, the things that I like, and like say, even songs I like, I'll randomly accidentally drop like the song titles in the.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're the Star Wars person. We are the Trekkies, aren't we?
A bit, yeah. But a bit. The thing that came to my mind was the dome because of people being in enclosed space at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's what I thought about at the beginning.
Probably. Yeah, maybe. Your other books, because Biomlog was your first one, like you said, and you moved on to another. Is it also a trilogy? The Ghost Stories?
You've written? Yes.
There are two books out yet.
The Nightmares Out.
I think they're three out yet. The Chronicles of, maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, of Seal the Lane.
Super close. I pronounce it Zyle. There's a million different ways to pronounce it.
Okay.
I've heard them all.
Okay, not so far off then. Okay, so I found there are three out yet, aren't there? The Nightmare, the Curse, and the Ruination.
Yes.
Yeah. Will there be more, or do you think that you're done with it?
So there is going to be, I recently finished writing a novel that's like a prequel to The Villain, and this novel went longer than expected, so it's very... Honestly, I worry it's a little like Biomlock. Biomlock, I find, is super overly detailed and wordy, and the sentences are really long. I don't like that about it. So I was trying to write in third person while still making it clean and concise. This one's pretty wordy again, but it's not like nearly as bad as Biomlock. And it's pretty exciting, and it's this villain origin story about the villain. And it's going to be probably published, I don't know when. But it's takes place in the same city. There's little locations and references to the Zyle books. And on terms of like literally books about Zyle and Aaron, the main characters, I'm planning to do another trilogy about them because I feel their story isn't over yet.
Ah, okay, there's more to come then. And you also have three standalones. You Won't Know Her Name, The Accidental Insurgent, and I Know Her Name. So from what I gathered, The Accidental Insurgent is also kind of dystopian sci-fi novel, whereas the other two are more like, how to put it?
It's in the present.
Yeah, it's in the present. In real time. It's a real world, and it covers more things like how to be a teenager, survive high school, something like that.
I'm pretty close. So yeah, The Accidental Insurgent is another dystopian novel. It was objectively my favorite to write. It was super fun to write. The writing quality is a little weird. Like the writing style is a little repetitive, but it's also like the main character is in a hurry and you can kind of hear her voice. I love The Accidental Insurgent. I finished writing the first draft in 16 days. So it was very chaotic. I was writing 4,000 words a day. I was like just easing on through it. And then after I took one look at it and kind of panicked because I didn't know what to fix. I couldn't figure out what to change, what to add. Added one scene, then didn't touch it for months. So my writing process is very strange. As for You Won't Know Her Name and I Know Her Name, those books are both connected. You Won't Know Her Name is a novel told in poetry about the very true bullying experiences that my sister and I faced in middle school. Mm. It is by far my most successful book. It has sold about half of all of my book sales are from You Won't Know Her Name. It's also free. The ebook's also free. And that book has completely changed my life. It's gotten so much acclaim. It's honestly like... It's the one people buy first of all my books. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I would suggest getting Biomlock or Zyle or perhaps The Accidental Insurgent. Like, start out with a dystopia. That's what I write the most. But it turns out people prefer reading about my trauma. So I don't mind. I think it's a really good book. And it helps people, I feel. I have people write me notes at my school and be like, hey, I read your book. This happened to me too. Or I have people message me online and saying, your book is really relatable. I can't believe this happened to you. And that's like kind of made it, I think, all worth it. And then I Know Her Name is just a collection of poems I wrote about the same topic. Mm. A lot of those poems I never expected to publish. So I feel like a lot of them aren't actually that good. But then again, all writers think their writing's not good. So
true, yeah.
There's that kind of aspect of it. And yeah, I Know Her Name is meant to be read after You Won't Know Her Name, though I guess one could read it first. I don't really recommend it because you might be very confused.
Mm. It's a different question. You said you wrote about 4,000 words a day. Mm-hmm. For someone who struggled to write maybe 1,000 words in an essay, how is that possible?
So whenever I'm really excited about a book I'm writing, which actually happens a lot with the dystopian novels, I feel like a lot of the books, Bioblock, I could only do about 1,000 or 2,000 words a day. Zyle was about 1,000. You Won't Know Her Name was maybe 1,000 as well. But The Accidental Insurgent was, 4,000 words a day. And the reason behind that is I was super excited to continue the story. I wrote 2,000 words in the morning and 2,000 in the evening, and I had my extracurriculars going on. And I think I was just really excited to see where the story was going to go. I do not outline any of my books. I always make sure that I don't know very much about them beforehand. And that way, like, I have to figure out like what's going to happen on the spot. And then the story can surprise me a little more. And then I'm actually excited to see what's going to happen without already knowing.
Ah, you're a penciler then. You're not a planner.
Yeah.
And do you have somehow notes to don't get confused with who is who and who has done what and so on? Or do you just remember?
Most of my notes are written in my notes app, where I often actually write more little story notes that I like, things I want to happen, quotes, little scenes. Honestly, the majority of it just is like tropes. So like enemies to lovers, and I will put that in there, and then I'll be like, okay, so who's gonna have the enemies to lovers? And I'll be like kind of picking through the characters and seeing like which ones kind of work for one of the tropes I've picked. And that's pretty, it's a pretty good method. Sometimes I'll heavily plan out my books more. Like the one I'm writing right now, it's like I know what's gonna happen, but I'm excited to write it because I'm excited about the things that are happening. And it's not all like boring world building. I don't know. I need to actually, I layer in my world building after a lot. So I should probably do that with this book so I don't forget. But yeah.
And you said the other books that are not quite that fictional or not science fictional, they are the ones that sell the best. And do you also get, I don't know, reviews or feedback, let's say, not just from teenagers, but also from adults?
Get the majority of my views, I feel, I don't, reviews I feel are actually from adults. A lot of them are from adults that picked up my books from maybe like a promotion or something, and they're very a lot of adults really like my books. I think I've never received a written negative review. I do like when reviews provide feedback. A lot of it is like I write down like things I want to change in my books. For example, BioMlock, I don't like the writing style in it. That's probably gonna stay throughout the series, but it's like it's very wordy, it's very detailed, it's very rich, but it's also not the best. I feel like it's a little boring. In Zile, some of the sentences are a little longer too. In Insurgent, there's something about the writing style I don't like, and I usually write down all the feedback I get. Although I've gotten one written negative review, and it's about how I kill off too many characters and how I end my books on two big cliffhangers. So I don't know what to change in that. It was for the Zile series, and Zile is a horror book technically, so I don't know what to say to that. But, you know, I don't kill off as many characters in the next book because all the characters are already dead. that's not a spoiler. Don't worry. It's
no one left to kill, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting to know. And you mentioned editing already. How was the process for you? I mean, to sit down and write your book. Okay, fine. You put it in your computer or put it on paper and then you want it to go out there in the world. And how did you manage that? I mean, lots of independent authors struggle with that, even though they are adults. So who helped you and how did you find the help and how did it work out for you?
So I have a writing coach who, after I self-edit my books, helps me edit them again in like fine little plot holes and all the grammatical stuff, and helps me shorten the sentence structure. Believe me, the sentence structure in BioMlock was a little longer before it was published. And it's not that bad anymore. But like, yeah, so I have a writing coach who helps me, you know, go through my books and make sure there's anything that needs to be changed, helps me, because there are usually a couple of grammatical errors. You know, I'm 14, I sometimes will spell things wrong, I'll sometimes have like missing commas or periods. Often I think maybe that's true for adult authors too, that there's no book that's going to be grammatically perfect. And then in terms of self-editing, I am a horrible self-editor. I finish my books really quickly. Generally, I write them in a short enough period of time that I don't know what to fix, and I have trouble fixing things. Usually when it's in third person and maybe there are multiple POVs, there are scenes I'm going to add that I forgot about, but very often I cannot think of anything to fix whatsoever, and I'm usually really... Usually, I feel like it would be, if maybe I took more time to self-edit my books, I'd be able to kind of fix them a little more than I do, but like I can't figure out like what to fix in them, and it's usually a little bit of a problem, but it's also like I kind of also maybe because the moment I finish the books, I try to go back and edit them. And that does not work for me because I finish them so quickly and I just like don't want to even look at it anymore. So then I go and start a new book and come back in a few months. And by then my writing's improved enough that I can edit a little. But at the same time, I don't actually self-edit as much as I would like. It's usually just like grammatical stuff.
And do you think, would you agree, I'd say, that going back to your book after an extended period of time helps?
100%. Because usually once you finish, you're very sick of the story or you don't want to go back and re-edit it. And maybe you just, like, your writing style hasn't changed enough, but you're not going to be changing anything quality-wise. And you're just going to be like staring at the page, scrolling through it, and just seeing what Grammarly offers. Sometimes still even after months, I just do that and I just see what the like autocomplete does and I have to go back and look at it again and again. But yeah, I always, whenever I finish a novel now, I go and I either edit another one or I write a completely different book. And that's why BioMlock 4 still hasn't been edited yet, because I have a couple other books that need editing.
Okay. And when you go back editing, do you feel that you can't let go then? Because one of our authors said, yeah, I can do that better and I can do that better. And I don't want to let it go because I know I can do a lot of things better. But I have to. And I'm grateful for my editor. She said, okay, let it go now.
Yeah, it's like sometimes I spent months editing BiomeLock. And that's because mainly BiomeLock, I finished it. It was probably about 100,000 words when I finished it. It grew 100,000 words in editing. And I think the reasoning behind that is that the beginning was very poorly structured. The sentences were, instead of being too long, they were way too short, really quick. But they weren't good. They weren't strong. They didn't have that description that was needed. The dialogue was very much lacking something. And because of that, I had to go through and I rewrote pretty much the entire book. And then I had to go back and do it again. And then it added actually it was around 150,000 words. It was very, very, very difficult.
Can I imagine?
And then I think actually because of that, now I am very much trying not to fix so much so I don't end up completely changing the story as I did with BiomeLock. Though BiomeLock was necessary, the others aren't.
And if you go over the book again while editing, do you ever think, okay, I should have done this completely different? Do you get new ideas for a story?
Oh yeah. This is probably right when BiomeLock was done, when it was about to be published, and I was just thinking and I was like, thought of a whole new storyline for it. It almost just started crying. I was like, no, I just missed that. Same with The Accidental Insurgent. Because I finished it so quickly, it's all one very, like, kind of smooth story. But after publishing it, I'll look in it and I'll read it and I'll be like, oh my God, the writing style in this is horrible, or this needs to change, this needs to change. Except, like, everyone who's read it said it's really good. So I think just writers can't, like, kind of see that their work is good. You know, everyone's like, well, I need to improve on this, I need to improve on that. And yeah, it's true, but I think writers don't appreciate themselves enough.
True. They're always in self-doubt, aren't they?
Yeah.
But it's the way you improve.
Yeah, I guess. True. And you said you and your sister had the idea of writing this book together. And you said, maybe that's not such a good idea. But is she the first one who gets to read your drafts or not?
Actually, no, she hasn't read them. She just doesn't have time to read my books between school. She's a straight A student and all her extracurriculars. Usually, I think once it's published, the first people to read it are sometimes my mom. That was especially with you on her name. My dad and my grandfather all are usually the first people to read it. Often it's like, I have friends who sometimes read them. My friend actually just now finished You Won't Know Her Name. And she finished it while we were at school, and she finished it right next to me, and she looked over to me and was like, this is a really good book. Like, yeah. And usually it's like my dad, or honestly random people on the internet finish them really quickly. I'll release them, and the next day I'll have like a 5 or 4 star review, and it's like, I finished this book, it was good. And I'm like, I just published it, how'd you get it that quickly?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And do you also have beta readers? I mean, aside from your dad and so on.
I've thought about recruiting them. My worry is that I have a fan base and a following of mostly young teenagers. And often I'm worried that I'm not going to get like the critique I need, or that it's going to take people months to finish. So I'm trying to find a book that like I really, 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 really want to improve on that I can like throw out there. Because right now it's like a lot of the time the books I'm really a lot more insecure about, I will get beta readers for. That was apparent with The Ruination of Zyla Delane. Super worried about it. I was just freaking out about it. And my dad read it before it was published, and he was kind of my beta reader. And he like loved it so much that I was like, you know, maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. And then I end up just publishing it.
Okay. And I'm also wondering, since your audience is rather young, you said 14 teenagers, but 14, 15, are you worried, or how shall I put it? You said you don't have any negative reviews as such. And are there any critiques about the people you kill off and how you kill them off? Or is it just, oh, yeah, well, she did it. Okay.
It's more of like, I feel like, you know, a story could be better. I feel like, I don't know, I've never gotten, like, I really appreciate when people give me critique. I'm not a fan of, you know, 1-star, 2-star reviews, especially on 14-year-old, because, you know, I'm young. I have room to improve. I feel like a 1-star without any reason. I get some. They'll leave the rating, won't say anything. Those usually bother me a little. Then it's good. It's like they're not overly trashing my book. They're not going to make me cry or anything.
Yeah.
But like I got that. I was BiomeLock. It was actually mostly a target audience thing where I had done this big kind of newsletter promotion, and it was under science fiction. But it was like the other science fiction books in that promotion were very different than BiomeLock. They were more, you know, robots. And I mean, there are robots in BiomeLock, but it's not like the main kind of focus. They were not dystopian. And because of that, I got, you know, some ones and threes, and I got a lot of fives too, but that was very, very bothering for me. Still haven't fully recovered from it, but it's like, you know, I'm young, I have room to improve, I have room to have more successful books. It's like everything, all these books right now that I have, they're not going to be as good as the ones I will have in, say, 10 years.
True.
So you definitely want to continue writing.
Yes.
And do you want to continue writing for young adults, or as you get older, your audience grows up with you?
This is that one interests me, because I think, honestly, I've started to notice that, yeah, my with every book, I'm writing at the current age level I'm at. I was 13 when I was writing Biome Lock, and I say Biome Lock's maybe 12 or 13. And actually, no, I was 12 when I started writing Biome Lock, and I say it's 12 and up. I was 13 for Zyle, and I say it's 13 and up. I was actually still 13 for You Won't Know Her Name, but I say it's 14 or 15 and up, so oopsies. But it's like, I do think I grow with my books. I actually, at some point, I want to write for some middle grade audiences, because that's a whole nother, you know, that's a whole new group of people that can read my books. And like, even children's books, I've thought about, I want to maybe write some children's books about my cats, because I used to do that. That's kind of how I started, is I would write these little picture books about my cats in like first and second grade. And they were, I have them, they were very accurate to how real books are. They have the about the author page in the back, they have my back cover with the other books by the author, they have a dedication. I'm kind of surprised no one saw this coming, that I was going to be an author. I kind of surprised my family, except it's very obvious.
Cats are always a good subject, aren't they? They are very inspiring, let's put it that way.
And they sell very well.
You have to sell. They sell all the time, indeed. And you said you might grow up with your audience. And what about genre? I mean, now you are in the... I put you in the science fiction genre, in the horror genre. Do you think you will expand into another genre as well?
I'm not sure. I write contemporary. I go to every single genre that's like, I'll write anything. So I'll be like randomly, you know, going about my day, and I'll decide I'm gonna write a fantasy novel. And honestly, I don't think that's fallen through. While I was writing Biome Lock, when I was almost done, I started writing a new fantasy book. Did not last long. Sentence structure was really out there. It was so overly descriptive that I was using the same words that meant the same thing to describe one thing. It was something else. I sometimes just read it out loud for fun. First chapter was good. The second chapter felt like something that I would have written and put on a fan fiction website. But definitely I've thought about fantasy. I've thought about lots of genres. And honestly, I think at some point I'm going to try to do as many as I can.
Yeah, why not? Keep your mind open in that way. Absolutely. Would you say then there is a genre you would never write in?
Not sure. It depends. I don't want to write books that are like for too mature audiences, because I don't want to write stuff that like my younger readers aren't going to be able to read. I like right now how I have it, where like a more mature 12-year-old could read, say, actually, The Accidental Surgeon's pretty 12 and up. It's pretty good. But like a younger person who read maybe Biome Lock could still, maybe if they're mature enough, read You Won't Know Her Name. So I like keeping them in relatively like the same kind of age levels. Although I assume at some point I'm going to do middle grade. But still, I think teenagers can enjoy middle grade books. I sometimes go back and reread the books that I enjoyed in my childhood, and I still really enjoy them. I still like them. The only worry is that I don't think my younger readers can read You Won't Know Her Name, but that one is very, it's very like marked. It's like, this book is not for younger readers. Please be careful. And there are multiple instances where it like warns a reader. So I think that one's all right. But yeah, the other books, honestly, if you read one at one age, you can read them all and you'll enjoy them the same.
Even at school, students read adult books. So I think people can read books that are not, where are not exactly the target audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite book which is actually for adults?
I think I do. One of my favorite books is It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover. I also really like The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which is technically a young adult book. I think it's for 15 and up. I read it in seventh grade. So that was one that I was technically not supposed to read, but I read it and it's a perfectly good book. My parents love the movie. And I think, honestly, honestly, now I don't really read many books that are for like lower target audience than mine. I like reading books that are for older audiences, because they kind of help me improve my writing and also help me see like, okay, in a few years, maybe I'm going to be writing for this age level. Like, what kind of works for that age level? What books are popular? You know, and it's kind of research, but it's also like, I don't know. I'll read anything. I just read a book that I don't actually know the age rating, but it was a really underground book and it was really good. I read anything I find.
And what about, let's say, a writing community for you? Is there one? Did you join one? And If so, how did you feel coming together with other writers?
So the only writing community a part of is actually, it's a Discord server. We have about 200 members, and I actually created it. I have met like some of my really good friends on that server. I've never met them in person, but I have a ton of online friends now. They're all writers because of that server, and I made it and I promoted. I have a TikTok account. I have about 17,000 followers on there. Promoted on the TikTok account. I had a ton of people join, and we have this really, really like supportive community, and they're all really funny too. We all joke around. We all write, and we've like just hang out, and that's pretty much the only writing community I'm a part of, and it's pretty much the best decision I've made. We have like so much fun, and we're actually working on like expanding the server and adding new features, mm-hmm. and it's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Do you also support each other with your writing then?
100%.
Really, yeah, okay.
And are the community members mostly of a younger age or completely different?
We like to keep it for younger people. We have, I think the youngest is probably 12 or 13, and we have a lot of 12, 13, 14-year-olds. We have some 15, 16-year-olds. We have some people who are older in their 20s, but we're not quite sure if we're going to keep the server open to all ages, or mm-hmm. we're going to make it just for young people, because mm-hmm. in theory it is kind of a young writers community.
Yeah. And what about book fairs? I mean, the pandemic put a stop to that, but before the pandemic, and maybe even
after
or now, I don't know about the regulations in the United States, but did you attend? Will you attend? Are you looking forward to something like
really
that?
I really want to. I want to go to book fairs. I want to sign books at book fairs. I'm just starting to kind of do the information mm-hmm. on book signings. Actually, I'm in a hotel right now because I am. A bookstore is carrying You Won't Know Her Name, and I'm going to go and see it. And I'm going to take some pictures with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely working on book signings mainly. Once like more book fairs start, I'm going to start trying to go there, sign books, maybe go to writing conferences, and just kind of get myself out there more. Actually, there's one book fair. I don't remember where it is exactly, but You Won't Know Her Name is up for a book award. And if it wins, I can get to sign books in at a book fair.
And
fingers crossed.
Yes, of course. Good luck with that. And also, are you looking forward to maybe sit on the panel and talk about with other writers about your books?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be so cool, and to get to actually like talk with other authors and like answer people's questions. It's a dream.
Yeah, it can come true.
Yeah.
That's something you have to look forward to, I think.
Yeah.
Because it can happen all the time, even now that the pandemic is hopefully coming to an end. Let's hope. Keeping our fingers crossed now. It will go on again. And did you by any chance watch any online events in the writing community or not at all?
I haven't, but I haven't had time to. Like, I've registered for some and I've just completely missed them. I am not the most organized person, so I'll forget about them.
But you have to be organized to be able to manage school and writing and editing.
Yeah.
It's two full-time jobs at least.
Yeah.
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 I'm pretty organized when it comes to, actually, maybe I'm not. Usually, as soon as I get home, I just start writing and panic about my schoolwork later. So that's my schedule.
Good idea. But you still sleep.
Yeah. I try not to write actually close to my bedtime because the writing is very much completely sloppy, or maybe it's really good. Sometimes I've had these moments where I'm working on both my 15th and 16th book right now. My 16th book is going to be a poetry book. I wrote it all at midnight, and I'm going to indicate that in the title because some of the poems are really bad, but it's really funny because I wrote literally this entire thing at midnight. I'm going to probably continue it on another midnight just to keep up that kind of vibe. And I was so tired, I could barely see what I was typing, and I read the poems in the morning, and a lot of them were really good. A lot of them were very random, so.
Okay. Which makes me wonder, when does school start in the United States?
So for us, it varies. I've had one school start at 8:45, another at 9. Mine right now is kind of 8:45, like that's when we go in, but school officially starts at 8:50. I'd prefer if it were later, actually, because like I like my sleep. And then we get out at 3:15.
Yeah, who doesn't? Because we start usually an hour earlier, I think.
At 8.
Yeah.
Do you make notes if during the day or in the middle of the night an idea comes to your head? Do you write it down, or do you try to remember it, or do you make a note in the phone? Or
I always will write it down. I've had some where it's been like it's been so late, my phone's all the way downstairs, so what I'll do is I'll write it on a piece of paper. I do not have good handwriting, so it's very unreadable, but like I'll be able to understand it. No one else will. They'll be like, why'd you scribble on this piece of paper? It's like, it's my idea, it's my $1 billion idea.
What would you say as a writer? You are very young, like you said, and you have still potential. Of course you do. You can still develop. But who would you say is for you right now at the moment your role model, if you have one? I don't know.
Not sure. I have a lot. I idolize a lot of authors. And like screenwriters, everyone, even fictional characters who like to write. I'm like, I want to be this person. It's like, they're fictional. Right. So
you mentioned screenwriting. Is that something you would be also very interested in?
I think so. It would be super cool to write movies. I think it's very different from writing, but in ways it's very similar. So I'd have to kind of learn. I really just got to get to it. I've been kind of so focused on my novels, I haven't learned more about screenwriting. I think publishing a ton of novels at 13 and 14, that's one thing. Selling a screenplay at 14, I don't know, because there's no way to self-publish a screenplay. You know, you gotta sell it to a producer, and then you gotta make it into a movie, and you gotta work on a movie. But definitely something for when I'm older.
There's still time.
The possibilities are vaster now with, I don't know, Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah,
the field is wide open in this regard. And I also wanted to ask you about your covers. Who was the artist, and was it the first artist for you? Was it someone you were satisfied with from the start, or did you change artists?
So all of my books have different artists. Biomlock was designed by an artist from Reezy.com, and that was the first collaboration I ever had. It went really smoothly. I have this beautiful cover. Hopefully for the other three books from him. Xyle Delane was done by an artist called Moonpress. Actually, I did the third book cover, but these two, and she's a really great designer. She designs fantasy covers, everything. And then Biomlock was designed by Mibble Art, and they're a cover design company from Europe, and they are super cool. They design these beautiful covers. Their prices are really good, and they do not take bookings, so they have a turnaround time of like 5 days. It's insane. They do hard covers, marketing graphics, illustrated covers, everything. And then you won't know her name. This is actually the second cover it's had. The first one was one that I designed myself, and then I recently got it redesigned. This was done by Murphy Ray. She's super cool. Another really smooth collaboration, beautiful cover. It has the dust jacket art and everything. And then I Know Her Name, which is the poetry book. I did this one myself.
Well done. Perfect. And you are independently published.
Yeah.
And was that your intention from the beginning? Or did you try sell your manuscripts? Or did you approach any publishers or agents? I don't know.
When you started writing, did you start with the idea, I want to publish it, or did you write because you wanted to write?
Kind of a combination of both. I write it because I wanted to write, but I also wrote because I love the idea of seeing my books as physical books. And when the book is this really small 40-page book, it's not as satisfying as a, 200, 300, 400-page manuscript, book, not a manuscript. So I did start writing Biomlock with the idea that I wanted to get it traditionally published, and I wanted that to happen quickly. You know, I wanted to be this cool teen author, except I kind of realized that a lot of the things that traditionally publishers do as for a 14-year-old aren't too great. I didn't want to spend months obsessively editing and catching like every little thing, and just spending all my time on this book instead of schoolwork. And I didn't want to have story be changed, perhaps. I didn't want to have all these changes, and I didn't want to have no control over the cover. And eventually I kind of just decided that I wanted to self-publish, and build this platform first and build this whole portfolio of all these books. And then when I'm around 16, 17, when I'm getting closer to adulthood, I'm to try to get traditionally published.
It's an idea, absolutely. But you don't have to then, because like you said, you already have a portfolio and you are known by then.
Yeah, so if I'm still pretty successful, if things are going really well, I might just stick with it. I can get a lot of money from self-publishing. Self-publishing is gradually becoming more and more popular. It's becoming this thing that's we don't need to rely on a publisher as much as we used to. It's authors have the materials, and they have the support to do it themselves. It just, it's a lot of money and stuff. But again, it's if I can keep building my TikTok platform, I can, sell a lot of books. I have I know more than I did when I was writing Biomlock.
Yeah, you probably do.
You learn every day.
Yeah, of course. And you're very young, and I think at your age, you don't have problems with, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and like you said, TikTok. Unlike...
A bit older people.
Yes. Oh, the old ones like us. Yeah, because try as I might, I can't can wrap my head around Facebook.
Well, I can't either.
You made her day.
Yes, because not for me, I have to say that, not for me. But you have to constantly be present, don't you? I mean, no matter how old you are, and when you're a writer, if you want to sell your books, you have to be present on social media, don't you?
No matter how successful you are.
Yeah.
They still expect
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And even more so if you're independent, I mean...
Yeah, I think independent authors especially really need to have some social media presence, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok is especially helpful, honestly. Goodreads, I think, is very toxic and very kind of scary, but is like authors need to be on there. Maybe don't check your book pages obsessively like I do. I can't stop obsessively checking all my pages to see if there's a new review. It is a problem because, like, you know, I'll get some good reviews and maybe I'll like notice, oh, someone rated my book, you know, 2 stars, 3 stars, and I'll get like a little hurt at first, or someone added it to their list of books they didn't finish. And it's like all of that is like subjective. And I think especially, you know, authors need to have some sort of presence on Goodreads. They just need to have a page on there, really. And especially like that can't, actually, I feel like that can't be your one social media too. Honestly, I think Instagram and TikTok's a little difficult to use, but it's one that I think authors should kind of look into more. It's a little hard to go viral, but it's like, you got to kind of keep seeing what works. Instagram is a little difficult. I like using the Instagram advertising functions to advertise like my new book releases. You can make these really pretty posts. And honestly, I use it a lot also to just connect with my classmates and people from school. And I actually am starting to use TikTok more than I use Instagram.
I can understand that. And you're also on Twitter.
I am. Yeah. I have a Twitter page. I don't tweet things as much just because I don't know what to tweet necessarily. Sometimes I'll forget to announce new book releases. It's like at some point, you know, I want to have like enough following that I can use Twitter to kind of respond to fans' questions. But right now I don't exactly have that. I have like 20 followers on Twitter.
Yeah, we've talked about it with our other guests, and it's my impression that Twitter is something for the Europeans, I think. I get the impression that people from the United States are more involved in Facebook and, like you said, Instagram and such.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know many people that will, like, kind of really, really post on Twitter. It's like, it's a lot of, like, it's very hard to get, like, views and followers, I feel.
Yeah, true. You have to be constantly there and like and post something new. But I can cope with Twitter. At least that's what I can say.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Regardless of what platform it is, it takes a lot of time to be present on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you have done, I think you said in the email you sent, that you've done podcasts before. You're not the first to have you on, but you have done it before. How helpful is that, being present on a podcast, being invited and get your word out?
I think they're really fun and they're good to get the word out. You get to talk to a lot of amazing people. You get to access these new audiences and you get to like kind of meet new people and you get to, you know, you get a few book sales per interview. The podcasts have by far been the coolest thing I've done, like all these interviews. And it's really like, honestly, it's probably better than TikTok marketing. It's funner than making all these crazy videos.
Yeah, true.
You can talk to people.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than putting an idea or a picture out there and waiting for a response.
Yeah. And when it's not live, it's also easier for authors to get their ideas across, to be honest.
Because if you, after it, remember, maybe, just maybe, shouldn't have said this or that.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah. I've missed live interviews before. Once. Actually, only once, where I had a live interview and I got the time zone, like, 1 hour off, and it was a live one, and the person they were interviewing wasn't there.
Oops.
Yeah, that's these digital possibilities are fantastic, but the time zones are a bit difficult.
Yeah, tell me about it, because that's what I constantly worry about. Did I get the time right? is it really the correct time? Yeah. I put in my diary, because, you know, being in Vienna and talking to someone in the United States is sometimes a bit difficult, since you have more than one time zone over there. It's easier when they are close, because 1 hour, what's 1 hour time difference? It's nothing. So that's
but
okay.
10 hours.
10 hours is, it's hard. Did I get it right? It's always my constant worry, and I love to check again. And but I'm always glad, like you did, you confirmed my email. I said, okay, yeah, she got it, and we are on, and perfect, everything's fine. Yeah, that's good for me to know.
And luckily, there are some apps out there where you can check the time zones and the time difference.
Great. I got it right. Oh, thank goodness. Yes, I had nothing to worry about. Okay, Shanti, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about your books, about your future projects, anything at all?
I think my next book, The God's Right Hand, is going to come out hopefully March or April of 2022.
Looking forward to that. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Teacup?
Everything covered?
Everything covered. We have everything covered.
Apart from what's the book about?
Yeah, sorry.
It's another dystopian novel this time, but it's about a civil war between East and West America. And they're both sides are really bad, but what ends up happening is there's this girl named Eris, and she finds out that she can't get shot. Someone tries to shoot her, and she catches the bullet in her hand. And this opens up a lot of, you know, military possibilities, and, you know, now there are a lot of people after her, basically, and she doesn't know, you know, which side she can trust. She doesn't know who to trust. More importantly, she doesn't know what she is, because, you know, that's not a normal thing. And it's like she has to kind of discover who she is, along with like keeping herself alive and in like the right hands, kind of.
Maybe she has been genetically changed, or maybe a little bit of a cyborg. Yes, we have to read it then. Absolutely,
sounds intriguing.
Oh, interesting. Especially the East-West thing. Not just the Wild Wild West. The Wild Wild East maybe as well. Who knows? We're looking forward to it. Wonderful. Shanti, it was such a great pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
It was our pleasure. We learned a lot about writing for young adults and how much fun it is for you to do so. And I think you will keep on writing and writing and writing. And
lots of books.
Lots of books. And I'm sure your audience is looking forward to each and every one of them.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Thank you for being on our show, and have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did, and we'll meet again at Book Lovers Companion.